Let us know your thoughts from the weekend on all things Beckham sending off. We'll be talking about that a little later on as well. But first, it is time to welcome to the show a man who we love having on World Football Daily. He is an expert on all things Spanish football. The man who, in our minds, would always be up for the journalism equivalent of the Ballon d'Or every year. It is, of course, Graham Hunter joining me on the line today. Graham, how are you doing today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Buenos dias. Doing well. It's grim and it's raining and it's surly and it's angry here in Barcelona at the moment. Perfect weather to represent what happened last week.
I was going to say, is that a sign of the times and maybe the change? Do you buy into, firstly, into this discussion of there being a change in the world football powerhouse and Germany starting to take over from Spain?
Well, I buy into it to a certain degree, and I've been writing about it on ESPN for a while, simply because, you know, trailing around after Spain in particular, rather than the clubs, over the last few years, and having been a correspondent at the 2006 World Cup as well, it's been very evident to see that the impact which Jürgen Klinsmann and Jogi Löw had wasn't simply instant. It wasn't simply knee-jerk, and nor should our reaction be. Their ideas, their concepts, what they preached, what the DFB asked, you know, demanded all clubs to invest in terms of not just nursery rearing of German youth, but a skills program which asked them to address the skills deficit, really. They had a national moratorium, they had a real problem, and they reacted in the right way. And so from maybe the last 9 or 10 years, what they've been doing is bringing through kids who've been taught slightly differently, putting a premium on skill and pace and technique. And therefore, I don't think, in fact, it's a stupid phrase, I don't think. I've been writing now for a couple of years about the evolution of German club and national football as a major threat, and I was helped by having seen the way that Germany played in the World Cup in 2006, but equally how, although they maybe didn't have the most impressive tournament in 2008, it was still a technically very able team. It was still patently an emerging team, and a significantly better Spanish side in 2008 could really only get past them 1-0, not shake them off. And from then onwards, certainly in 2010, I think we were all wowed by the German national side. And you know, it was an absolutely nail-bitingly tight semi-final, and it was famously then Iker Casillas said to me, I just asked him a simple question about what he felt about German football, and he said, look, they inspire fear in me because, and these are his words, he said, I think they're building, you know, a generation of footballers to dominate Europe for an era or two. And now, maybe with the absolute power of the performance of Dortmund and Bayern Munich, as well as the scorelines, we've begun to see the most patent, the most colourful realisation of that prediction. But, and this is where maybe we all need to be careful as broadcasters, analysts, writers, it's, you know, we might be entering into an era where Bayern Munich and Germany are more dominant. But I'm not certain that the Bundesliga yet stands comparison with the way in which, particularly, I would argue, Spain and England have been the dominant arguments over the last 10 years. Because if we accept that Götze has gone to Bayern Munich, if we accept that Lewandowski has gone to Bayern Munich, if we accept that there will be, whether he says he's staying or not, there'll be heavy pressure on Jürgen Klopp about whether he takes the next step at another club or attempts to keep Dortmund as powerful as they are with new players, that's two major losses. A coach, it's difficult to see him staying very long. In my opinion, that's not a news story, that's my opinion, that the temptations will come thick and fast, and whether it's this season or next, I think he'll accept them. And then underneath that, if you look at the infrastructure of Germany, you'll say it's healthy in many ways. It's marketing and it's ticket pricing and its infrastructure and in the fan culture, the fact that people, it isn't just easy to go to football, people want to go there, people want to sing for 90 minutes, people want to travel to away games. These are all things, you and I were born in Britain, it's something that we think is natural and we think it's important. All of that they've got right, as well as the skills training, but I would contend as vehemently as it's possible to do that underneath Bayern Munich and Dortmund, there's not an elite knot of three or four clubs. There aren't clubs who will add to this debate about domination or change of power. I think we may see a leap forward in the profile of German football in terms of trophies, but let's be brutal about this. German national team, no trophy since 96. No German club has won the UEFA tournament, the UEFA Cup, since 97. And no German club won the Champions League since 2001. So if we're seeing something of a shift, if we're seeing Germany elbowing its way onto the top table for club and international football, number one, if the teams play like the national team and these two teams are doing at the moment, fine, very welcome. And two, we have to be careful in not saying it's suddenly going to be, or, you know, the rest of Europe is going to be swamped by German dominance. I think that's currently far too strong a term.
It's been a very long building in German football to get to this point, and a lot of people are talking about it. It's still time yet. And Iniesta saying last week that he felt that everybody was being very unfair on Barca because of the result against Bayern, and that Barca's time is not done yet. But are we seeing Barca need to bring a change in of some sort, because they look very one-optioned at the moment, especially against Bayern last week?
Well, much though, you know, in a recent part of my career, I have definitely placed a lot of faith in what the senior Spain players say, whether it's a Barcelona or Real Madrid, and Iniesta would count as one. He doesn't bluff. He doesn't engage in needless words. He's not somebody who particularly loves being in the media, but he treats it seriously, and he's an honest, intelligent guy. But at the moment, I look at the bewilderment in the faces of the Barcelona players, partly as they lost so heavily in Munich, but, you know, occasionally in other matches. And I think that they're not quite... I think that they're talking defensively and aggressively because they're champions, but I'm not certain that they're as able to fulfill, you know, their words as they have been in recent seasons. So I'm not saying that it's time to distrust these people, but I think that they're battered and bruised, and I think that while the weakness, the pallid, shaky-legged weakness of the Barcelona performance in Munich was startling for people who enjoy that brand of football that they play normally, there's a man, Chicky Begiristain, who was the football director for many years, first under John Laporta and Frank Rijkaard, but then subsequently identified Pep Guardiola, was the most persuasive voice in signing Guardiola, and then helped Guardiola build a squad. Begiristain left in 2010 because he doesn't see eye to eye with the current president, who was then the new president, Sandro Rosell. And, you know, it's only, I think, 14, 15 months ago, Tiki Begiristain was saying to those in his closest circle, Barcelona now currently believes that the only solution is the cantera, the only solution is the youth. And his point of view was that there had been an imbalance, that while Barcelona were still producing talents of, you know, to be admired, to be promoted, and who will serve in the first team and who will serve for Spain, namely Rafinha, definitely, whether it's a Barcelona or De La Feo, definitely Sergi Samper, Cuenca, Keio, Montoya. These are people you can count on. He was absolutely clear that Barcelona had been inadequate in replacing the quality of signings they made, if you include Pinto and Silvino, for almost no money, but who were fantastic servants. Larsson, not a penny they spent on him, but literally in the space of about 12 months became a legendary player, adored by the fans. And if you throw in Keita, for whom they spent decent money but got a huge return, Yaya Toure, on whom they made immense money, but they had an immense footballer. And if you talk about Eto'o as well, or Thierry Henry, both of whom they spent decent money. They brought specific types of players with power, athleticism, experience and height into blend with the youth products. And they're not doing that well at the moment. So your point about, do they need to End of era is what annoyed Iniesta. That press conference where people asked him about end of era, and he said, my definition is when a club has failed to win trophies for a consecutive number of years, and we haven't. Now, that's fine. But above him, in the technical direction of the club, things have changed, and they're making far fewer correct decisions. And that will, you know, given the amount of tiredness, mental and physical tiredness, that these years of domination have cost the senior Spain players, these are mistakes that Barcelona, if they wish to continue being in the vanguard, can't continue to make.
It's a massive uphill task, though, for both the Spanish sides in the Champions League this week, Graham. And Cristiano Ronaldo left out the squad for this week with that muscle strain that he's got. What's the news coming out on Ronaldo's fitness and being ready and 100% for Tuesday night? And what has to change for Real Madrid to be able to pull back and get this this victory, 3-0 victory against Dortmund this week?
Well, José Mourinho has spoken in Europe this morning and said quite clearly that Ronaldo will be fit, will start. And has talked about the degrees to which he thinks that improves Real Madrid's chances, and that's patently clear. So I'm going to trust that Ronaldo, who's a warrior, who's a strong man, and who craves this tournament, and has been distinctly Real Madrid's best player this season, and latterly is probably the best player in Spain too. He's had a better 2013 than Leo Messi, and you know, people who listen to me on your show regularly will know that that's by no means me disparaging Messi. I think Ronaldo has gone on, has moved on a level, and has addressed himself to lifting the team and putting himself in a position where he can be considered for the Ballon d'Or of next January. And I'm full of admiration for what he's done this season. So it's imperative he's fit. I think you can count on him starting. I think for sure. But I think that there are different questions. He can't win this game on his own. It's Pepe has been disastrous against Dortmund in the three matches. Of the eight goals Real Madrid have conceded to Borussia Dortmund in the two group games and then last week's thrashing, Pepe's been culpable for six of them. Lewandowski, for whatever reason, whether it's height, power, pace, intelligence, is too much for him. And as such, I'd be very surprised. If Pepe's not on the bench, it means somebody else is not fit. I don't, Arbeloa won't make it. That means that Essien recently back from injury, but just a soldier for Mourinho, just somebody who always turns out for him, and I'd add somebody who's only got about 80% flex in his right knee, yeah, has been a steal. Real Madrid pinched him from Chelsea on loan when Chelsea could patently have done with him on this form. I think he slots in at right back. I think Quintero probably is fit at left back. Ramos and Varane in the middle. Big debate emerging in Madrid, particularly after Mourinho's press comments about whether perhaps Modric replaces Khedira in central midfield with Xavi Alonso in order to give the game a more attacking impetus. We'll see. We'll see. That would be against Mourinho's normal tendencies. But it's imperative. It's imperative they defend differently and immensely better than they have in the last three matches against Dortmund. Otherwise, they're out. Simple as that. They can win. They have a long history of enormous fight-backs between Real Madrid and Barcelona, I would say. The remontada, the fight back, is far more ingrained in Real Madrid's DNA. And there have been some spectacular nights. In fact, one of the first times I ever became aware of Real Madrid was, you know, watching them in the UK in a midweek sports programme when they'd been thrashed 4-1 by Derby County, starring a number of Scots in that team. But yet they still won in extra time. They lost initially 4-1, then won 5-1 at the Bernabeu. And watching those games was utterly startling to me back in, I think, 74 or 75. And as such, there's a cluster of results like that in Real Madrid's European history that says, look out, maybe Real Madrid can do it. But an absolute prerequisite is that right across the pitch, they compete better, they show greater athleticism and hunger, and they defend much, much better than they did in any of the three games against Dortmund.
Just very quickly on the Barcelona game as well, Graham, because I know you're very busy and feel free to take as long or as little time as you want over this last one. with Barca drawing in San Mamés against Bilbao, but a very weakened side, really. I know Messi in the lineup, and David Villa left on the bench. We saw him play in the game before the last Bayern fixture. Does that mean that we're expecting to see Villa start this Wednesday? Because a lot of people felt they were missing David Villa when they took on Bayern last week.
Yeah, I mean, I really must try not to be hypocritical in that for a long time this season, I've been angry at the technical decision to not give David Villa enough time on the pitch, particularly in the first quarter of the season. I thought it was ill-judged, and I was very defensive of him because I thought his form justified, not his past, but his form justified more minutes. And then he began to fulfill my prediction in that he became a leader, he became a scorer. His relationship with Messi was clearly much more pacific than when they were nipping and niggling at each other. And the big goals came, and he was an enormous part of the victory over Milan, the 4-0 win. The hard fact is, since then, including for Spain, form has deserted him. There's absolutely no way this is about age. There's no way this is about his injury. He's had a dip in form, which I suppose can follow a year and a half of layoff and lesser activity because of a brutal leg break. And what we've seen is the very conservative nature of Tito Villanova's reign, whereby they seem to lose trust in David Villa more quickly than you could ever have expected if you've grown up with his career. And I think he's, as well as a brilliant footballer, he's a brilliant competitor, and he brings, you know, a bite to Barcelona as a club, not just as a team. And it's a bite that they're lacking at the moment. And therefore, I hope that unless in the closed-door training sessions his form has been atrocious, I hope that he does start. I think that that idea of having, even though he wears seven on his back, having a number nine player which pushes the two centre-halves back, who's willing to compete with them in the air, and who sets the ball up, lays the ball up like he did for Pedro for the equaliser against Paris Saint-Germain, I think that's a key component of any decent Barcelona display on Wednesday night. However, I fear his time at Barcelona is coming to a far less glorious end than he merits, and it's been an uncomfortable watch. Because I think that both fate and then subsequently the technical staff have treated him poorly. So what we saw at San Mamés is when Messi came on, exactly as when he came on against Paris Saint-Germain, it's a pretty horrible sight. Everybody else raised their game. And that's not acceptable for any level of football. Park football, pub football, semi-amateur football, or the top level of world football. The degree to which psychologically his teammates need Leo Messi to inspire them and to make them believe is a factor that Barcelona need to address now. And therefore, him playing as well as he did at the weekend will make a small difference, but not sufficient. He did score a gem of a goal. Barcelona were much better with him on the pitch. But equally, they couldn't defend properly against Athletic Bilbao. So my view is, by no means is a win beyond Barcelona, but I think if you watch the recent trends, if you watch the way they've been playing, if you watch their physical ability, there's a threat of Bayern Munich coming here and winning again. So it's beyond my imagination that we have both Spanish teams in the Wembley final. It's feasible that one gets there, but I ain't holding my breath.
And it's likely that we see two German sides facing off in Wembley on the Champions League final. Graham, it's an absolute pleasure to have you join us here on the show today once again. And we appreciate you taking some time out from your busy day to fit us in and have a quick chat about all things Barca Real Madrid heading into the Champions League second leg semi-finals.
You're welcome. Enjoy your football this week.
And you too, Graham. And you too. Enjoy your time in Barcelona. Graham Hunter then joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Barcelona, Real Madrid and the worry that is Lionel Messi at Barcelona. Suddenly has that thing that has given them so much power and so much poise and prowess in world football. Is Messi now starting to hinder it slightly?